Devadatta with compassion. His smile and compassionate features also indicated that although Brahma would request Priyavrata to accept household life, Priyavrata would not be out of touch with devotional service. By the blessings of a Vaishnav, everything is possible. This is described in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as Kripa Siddhi, or perfection attained simply by the blessings of a superior persons. The blessings of a spiritual master or superior. Priyavrata was the grandson of Lord Brahma, and as joking competition sometimes takes place between grandson and grandfather, in this case also Priyavrata was determined to remain in meditation, whereas Brahma was determined that he rule the universe. Thus Lord Brahma's affectionate smile and glance meant, "My dear Priyavrata, you have decided not to accept household life, but I have decided to convince you that you must accept it." So we have a very interesting conflict. Narada Muni is convincing Priyavrata that renunciation is the way to go. And Lord Brahma is convincing him that no, not now, maybe later, but not now. No matter how spiritual, no matter how renounced, no matter how detached you feel from your palace, from your father, from your mother, from your kingdom, not yet, not now. And I'll get into that in just a few moments. In this verse, one important word is sukta vakena by Vedic hymns. In the Vedas, there is the following prayer to Lord Brahma: Hiranya Garba Samarvar Tagre, Bhutasya Jatapatir Eka Asit. Brahma was received with the appropriate Vedic hymns, and because he was welcomed according to the Vedic etiquette, he was very pleased. So it's, let me just end on just this point, but before I do, let me offer my humble obeisances unto Srila Prabhupada, Omagyana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya. Chakshurun Malitem Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto his lotus feet and pray that he will speak through me so that his message and not some separate message of my own will come through. Yes, so this sometimes poses a problem, and devotees are sometimes bewildered by it. First point is that Priyavrata was born into the family of royalty. He was not born into an ordinary family. In other words, he was one of the he was a prince, one of the leaders there. Although he wasn't very much interested in leading. Sometimes a person will be born into a royal family and will have very strong qualities of renunciation, such as strong discrimination, strong detachment, strong desire for asceticism, a strong desire to live in solitude. These are not usually the qualities of a kshatriya. A kshatriya is out, he's what we call like a gung-ho person. He's out there leading the battles. He's heroic. He can be noisy. He can be dictatorial. And yet he can also simultaneously be compassionate and understanding, as Arjuna was. He was a great leader, great warrior, great general, but also had many spiritual qualities. So here we have Prince Priyavrata with these spiritual qualities not wanting very much to be involved in family life, doesn't want to get married, doesn't want any children, and yet there's a vacancy in the kingdom. Manu is already getting, he's getting older, and he wants his sons to rule. King Uttapana has died, and now Priyavrata, it's his time to succeed his older brother. And by not doing that, that would put the burden back on Manu, who has already ruled for so many thousands and thousands of years. So we have this problem. And sometimes devotees, even in our ISKCON movement, have this problem that I found this many times. They actually are in household life, and they just want to leave it because of one problem or another. But let me just backtrack for a few seconds. There's generally a reason why a person enters into a family life. He enters into a royal family life. Obviously, he has some latent or dormant qualities of leadership. Otherwise, there is no reason for him to be born in that kind of a family. Better he would be born if he wants to be a renunciant and he's already achieved in his spiritual evolution that point in time where he's ready to finish up what he has begun in a previous lifetime, then the place to really to be born is a Brahmin family, because in Brahmin families, everything is dedicated and devoted to the glorification, to the honor, to the service and love of God. I mean, you learn from an early childhood what cleanliness and truthfulness and self-control, all those qualities of a Brahmin are, and you learn to practice them from an early age. But here we have Priyavrata. He's taken birth in a Kshatriya family. And he has strong, dormant qualities of renunciation. So what to do? Well, nobody minded when he went out to Gandhamadana Hill to practice renunciation at the beginning, because King Uttanapad was ruling. So it didn't matter that he went there and he practiced self-control. He practiced control over his speech, control over his mind, control over his body, focusing his attention on the Supreme Lord. And he received, of course, a certain amount of peacefulness and blissfulness and fulfillment and satisfaction. So, I mean, having that, who would want to leave it? I mean, who would want to go away from that? He was achieving what he had set out to do. We have a very interesting comparison in Dhruva Maharaj. As you remember, Dhruva Maharaj, he also met Narada Muni along the way. The situation was that his stepmother, was her name Suniti or what was her name? Anybody remember? Suruchi, yes. Yeah, his mother's name was Suniti. So Suruchi had offended him. She had made a very asinine and very bitter remark to the effect that when Uttanapad, when he was a boy, he was sitting on the lap of his father, and what was his? Anybody remember the name of Dhruva's brother? Was it Anuttama? Huh? What? Uttama? Is that right? Am I saying it right? Uttama? Yeah, so Uttama, he was sitting on the lap, one side, and little Dhruva, who was just 5 years old at that time, he wanted to sit on the other side. And then as he climbed up, his stepmother, Suruchi, says, "No, you can't sit. You're not going to sit on the throne. If you want to be the next king, then you have to be born from my womb." Because she knew she was favored, the favored wife of the king. Therefore, little Dhruva, being a Kshatriya, even at 5 years old, he was stung to the quick, and he was very upset that he could not sit on his father's lap as his brother was sitting on the lap. So his tears came running down his eyes, and he ran running to his mother, and his mother, he told mother what had happened, and his mother said, "Yes, that's true." I should, again, backtracking, Suruchi said, "If you want to be the next king, then you will have to pray to the Supreme Lord to be born in my womb. Then she was so puffed up and so proud and so arrogant that you have to come from me if you want to be the king. So my son here, he's already come from me, so he's going to be the next king. So you don't have a chance. So he was very, very upset and very disturbed, and he told his mother, I can't even sit on my father's lap. And my father, he said nothing. It shows how henpecked and ruled he was by his wife. He was afraid that if he raised his voice, maybe she would not, or she would deny him the sense pleasure that he was accustomed to receiving, and he was frightened that he would not maybe obtain some degree of sense pleasure that he was used to, so he didn't say anything. He didn't act in a protective way towards his son. I mean, a father who had discrimination and detachment from sense pleasure would have said, well, what do you mean? He's my son also. He has a right to sit on my lap. Who are you to talk like that to my... He's my son, and he's your stepson, so better you keep quiet. He didn't have that courage. He didn't have that determination. This is what happens when you become caught up in the... not only caught up, but dominated by the desire for sense pleasure. You become frightened to lose it. It becomes so important, and you think it's indispensable, which it's not. But because you become habituated to enjoying that person, in this case it would be his wife, her beautiful eyes, her beautiful smile, her preparing nice dishes for him. So all of this adds to more and more attachment. And what is attachment? Attachment is the feeling that something is indispensable, absolutely necessary in order to go on living. This is a horrible situation because the only necessity that we have to go on living well and nicely is Krishna. If we are dependent upon Krishna, if we learn to love Krishna, if we pray to Krishna, if we beg Krishna for his mercy to guide us in everything that we do, if we do Krishna's will, that is what is indispensable for our true happiness. But our sense pleasure is actually the bane of our existence. It causes us misery. It causes us weakness. It causes us indecision. It causes us uncertainty. And as we could see in King Uttanapad, by keeping his mouth shut, he caused this little child to be very, very miserable. And the child ran to his mother and told her what is. And she said, yes, you have been born to me, and I am not the favored queen, and consequently, your life is very ill-starred. In other words, everything that Suruchi said is true. So Dhruva said, well, why can't I become the king? She says, the only way you can become the king is if that is willed by the Supreme Lord. The Lord decides and determines these types of things, and it appears that your stepbrother is the one who will be the next king because the king is showing favoritism to him. So Dhruva said, well, no, I want to be the king. Not only do I want to be the king, but I want to even be better than my grandfather, Manu. I want to be better than my great-grandfather, Brahma. I want to be the highest, the biggest, and the best in the whole world. I want to be it. He's saying like that. He says, well, you know, if you want to be all those things, his mother said, then you're going to have to pray to Krishna and become devoted to Krishna, and you will have to beg him. And if he so desires, and if he thinks and believes that you're qualified to do that, then he will grant you that particular blessing. But if he doesn't think that you're qualified, you're not going to get it no matter how much you ask. He says, well, okay, then I'm going to ask him. So... immediately left the kingdom. Imagine a little five-year-old boy walking out in through the woods, and then he met Narada Muni, and Narada Muni says, hey, little boy, where do you think you're going? And he says, I'm going to find God. He says, and I want to talk to God, and I want to tell him what my ambitions are. He says, well, wait a minute. You just can't go and find him. You need a teacher to help you to find him. He says, well, then God will see my desire, and he'll give me a teacher. So Narada Muni tried to test him and discourage him, and he said, wait a minute, you're just a little five-year-old boy. Why don't you go back to the kingdom and play with your friends and play with your playthings, you know, with your little swords and dueling, you know, with the, get your little bow and arrow and shoot at the targets and go to school and be like everybody else. He says, no, I want to be greater than even Lord Brahma, and nobody can stop me. So Narada Muni says, oh, this kid is really, he's very determined. He doesn't even listen to me. And he knows who I am. He can see who I am. I'm a known personality. He said, all right, are you really certain about this? You know, you're going to live in the woods by yourself. There are lions and tigers and wolves and snakes. Doesn't that frighten you? He said, no. If God loves me, he will protect me. He says, well, this kid really has got faith. You know. So with that kind of faith, which is very quite high, he felt it was right and proper to teach him, to give him some instruction on what he should do to achieve his goal. So he taught him a number of things. He taught him certain breathings that he would do to quiet and calm his mind and get self-control over his mind. As we know, the mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. For one who conquers the mind is the best of friends. And one who fails to do so, his mind will remain his greatest enemy. So he taught him breathing exercises. How many of you have ever practiced Hatha Yoga and learned these pranayama? If you have, your mind can come very, very peaceful, very calm. And so once the mind is very calm, you can focus it and concentrate it on the Supreme Lord. Another thing he taught him is he taught him the very famous mantra that we chanted a few moments ago. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So he taught him that, and he taught him that mantra, and Dhruva would go and chant that. And he also told him how to observe austerity or asceticism. And Dhruva Maharaj learned in the first month, I believe, that he was living just on berries. And then on the second, and he would eat them once every 3 days he would eat berries from the trees. And then on the second month, if I recall, he would start eating leaves, just dried leaves from the trees, and he would eat them once every 6 days. And then the next thing was that after he did that for a month, the next is that he would drink water once every 9 days. That was on the third month of his austerity program. And then on the fourth month, he would just take a draft of air once every 12 days. That's how he learned this pranayama. So he'd take one, and he could use it in such a way that he was able to sustain his life and maintain a very high level, a very high state of meditation. So, in the course of doing this, he actually began to see the Supreme Lord within his heart. And he was experiencing great, tremendous ecstasy. So much ecstasy that he didn't even care about being bigger than Manu or Brahma or anyone. He realized he had something better than being a ruler of a kingdom. It came to him very clearly. Which is before he was an illusion. He thought, yes, if he could be the biggest and the greatest, then he could show this Suruchi who had inflamed him and who had reproached him and who had insulted him. He would show her that she should just keep her big mouth shut because while the son, her son, may be the king of this kingdom, but he would be the king of the whole universe. So he was out. He was definitely into a big vengeance deal here, very, very big. So anyway, he's meditating, and what happens is that the Lord, Vishnu, saw that he was meditating, and so what he did, if I recall, is that he had a conch. He had four arms, and with the conch shell, I think he tapped him on the shoulder as if to say, "Hey, open up your eyes now." Here I am. You're seeing me inside, but now I want you to see me outside. So he opened his eyes, and it was a little bit baffling initially, because here he was with his eyes closed, seeing the Lord in the heart, and now he opens his eyes, and the same Lord is in front of him. And he felt such joy, such peace, such happiness, such satisfaction. He says, "Yes, my Lord." He bowed his head. "What can I do?" I'm trying to narrate to show you that there's a parallel between these two stories and Dhruva deals with it, because he has the same problem as Prince Priyavrata. So he says, "Yes, my Lord, whatever you desire, I will do." So the Lord said, "Well, what would you like?" He said, "How can I serve you?" He said, "My Lord, I have been so foolish." He said, "I have been praying to you for a heap of glass, when actually, as a result of the austerities and the practices that Narada Muni had given me, I have found the most precious jewel in the universe, which is your very self, and I have found you in my heart. I don't want anything anymore. I am completely satisfied." So then the Lord said, "Well, wouldn't you like me to be satisfied also?" So he says, "Of course, I'm at your service. Whatever you would like me to do, I'm ready to do." He says, "Well, what I'd like you to do is to go back to your kingdom." "My kingdom? That kingdom?" He says, "I don't need the kingdom anymore, but I want you to go back to that kingdom." But why? "Because I have some service for you to perform. And I want you to do it because only you can do it, since you have the spiritual qualities, you have the attributes, you have the abilities that no one else has. And I want you to go back to the kingdom and to rule it. And I want you to get married." Not now, you're still 5 years old. We'll wait till you grow up a little bit. He wasn't going to rush the boy, even though he was quite premature in his spiritual position, but not in his physical position. He was still a little boy. So anyway, he said, "You go back and you will marry, and and then you will have children. And you will rule for, I believe it was 36,000 years, if I'm not mistaken. Am I to be corrected? Yes? Oh, huh? That is correct. Okay. 36,000 years. And then after that time, you will be free to go back home, back to Godhead. And you will see me quite frequently after that time." So what happened immediately, he says, "Well, wait, I really don't want to go back to the," little kids say, "I don't want to go back there. I just want to stay with you." He said, "But this is my order. And the mark of a good devotee is that he follows the order of his superior personality, namely of his spiritual master. And who is the order giver of your spiritual master? Narada Muni. Who gives him orders? Well, Brahma gives him orders. And who gives Brahma orders? I do. So, therefore, the order that I'm giving you is coming from your spiritual master, and you are obliged to follow the orders. Otherwise, you may lose much of your advancement by disobeying the orders of your spiritual master, which is one of the offenses against the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, to disobey the orders of the spiritual master." So Dhruva thought about this very carefully. He didn't want to lose what he had. He says, "Well, how will I rule the kingdom when I have all this detachment, when I have no care, no concern?" He says, "Well, you will just remember that I am telling you to be concerned about it, but stay detached from it. You can stay detached. Don't become entangled to the extent whereby you lose yourself in it. Always be aloof from it in one sense, inwardly. Inwardly means your real position, your real feelings. But externally, you can play the part of a householder. You can joke with people, with your family. You can praise people. You can go out to battle. And you can do all the things, but do them for me. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, whatever you give away, whatever austerities you perform, do it for me, Lord Vishnu says. If you do everything as a sacrifice to me, then you will not lose what you have. What you have gained, you will keep. Since you have already been given the blessings of Narada Muni, and when Narada Muni gives a great blessing, you have already have what is mentioned over here is kripa siddhi. In other words, you've been given, actually it's a combination of kripa siddhi and sadhana siddhi. You've already reached perfection. Nonetheless, you've been born in this Kshatriya family. And again, I mentioned at the very outset that when a person is born in a particular family, he has these tendencies, even though they may not be active, they're dormant. And the Lord could see that. And the Lord could see that Dhruva would be perfect for ruling the kingdom. Just as Krishna saw Yudhishthira was perfect for ruling the kingdom, and that's why he enabled the Pandavas to win the battle of Kurukshetra, even though everybody died except the five Pandavas and a few people from the other side, such as Kripacharya, and there were two others, the son of Dhritarashtra from his vice wife, and then there was Ashvatthama, three persons on the other side, and the five Pandavas. So he wanted Yudhishthira because Yudhishthira was righteousness personified. He was virtue personified. He was goodness personified, and he followed the orders of the Lord. And besides this, he was completely God-realized. He knew himself, he knew God, he knew what the purpose of life is, and he knew how to rule people in such a way that people would not be focused merely on acquiring and getting and accumulating, but also doing everything as a love offering to the Lord. As I mentioned in that verse before, let me give you a different one. Works done as a sacrifice for Vishnu must be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage in this material world. Therefore, perform your prescribed duty for his satisfaction, and in that way you'll be freed from the bondage to work. So Krishna is saying to Arjuna, he's saying that if you don't work in such a way as to offer what you are doing to the Supreme Lord, then you will take it to yourself. And if you take it to yourself as your accomplishment, then you're just binding yourself to the material world. And binding yourself to the material world is very much like, for example, if you have just imagine a tree, and somebody putting a rope around your body and around the tree, and you've got one loop around you, and now you acquire something else and you become attached to it, got another loop around you. Then you have your child, got another loop around you. You have your wife, another loop around you. Beautiful house, another loop around you. Before you know it, you got 10,000 loops around you. How are you going to get free of all of this tree? You're bound to it. And everything is so important to you, even though all these things, either you will be taken away from them at some point, or they will be taken away from you. So why are you so attached to these things? They're not indispensable. They're not absolutely necessary. You can live without them. Although at this point in time, that may not be the thing for you to do, but in actuality, you can live without, for example, your house. People live in the forests. You know. Anyway, coming back to Dhruva Maharaj and then coming back to Priyavrata, this all connects. So Dhruva Maharaj surrendered to the Supreme Lord, and he ruled the planet, as I said, for 36,000 years. And what was the reward? Well, when it was time for him to leave, an airplane descended, not the 707s that we have here over at the Chicago O'Hare. That's not that kind. It was truly a glittering airplane made of Satchit Ananda, because it came from the eternal world, the spiritual world, to take Dhruva to the place which he had earned by following the order of his master and the order of the Lord. And this is so important, to follow the order of God, even if you don't like it. And I'll relate this to our situation as servants of our spiritual masters, or merely if you don't have a spiritual master, how servants, how it's very important to follow these orders, what qualities it will help you to develop. So, anyway, it was at the end, and the airplane descended, and then Dhruva, he was about to step into the airplane, but death personified was blocking his way. So Sanva was blocking his way, and he was bent down as if offering obeisances. So Dhruva Maharaj just stepped on death itself, and stepped on him and over him. And then just before he entered the plane, he said to one of the servants of Lord Vishnu, he said, "Well, wait a minute, my mother was the one who told me what I had to do in order to get into this wonderful position. She was the one who told me that if I wanted to achieve a high position, that I would have to worship the Supreme Lord." Now, it so happened that Dhruva Maharaj, after he finished his 36,000 years of ruling, he would go to Vaikuntha, but there are two Vaikunthas. There's the Vaikuntha of the material world, this world, which is known as the pole star, or what was later to be called Dhruva Loka. And then there is the Vaikuntha planet, which is beyond the Paravyom, or beyond the Viraja River, where you cross through the seven layers of the material world. Then you go over the the Viraja River, where Lord Vishnu, Karana Dakshaya Vishnu, lies. And then you go into one of the planets there. So Dhruva Maharaj was to be awarded the kingship, the leader, the ruler of the pole star, which is a stationary star, as far as I understand. Is that correct? It stays in one area, that it doesn't circulate? Okay, I got a few nods there. I mean, I'm trying to remember stuff that I learned like 60 years ago, and so forgive me if I have to ask you for some concurrence. So anyway, he would become, but then he said, "Well, what about my mother? She was the one responsible." So the servant of Lord Vishnu said, "Yeah, well, we have a, look over there, you see, we've got a spaceship for her too." He says, "Oh, well, okay, if she's going, then I'm going, but I don't want to go without her," because he felt so obliged to her. You can see the wonderful etiquette that he had, not just etiquette, but the love that he had, and how much he appreciated his mother for what she had done for him. She had given him the direction, even though she didn't like the idea of him walking off into the forest. Can you imagine? Some of you Maharajis, you have a 5-year-old child, and he says, "Well, I'm going off to find God. But when you're just a little boy, doesn't matter. I've got to find this, and no one can stop me." And she knew she couldn't stop him. So anyway, what happened was that he got into the airplane, and the airplane rose, and his mother's plane, and they went to that pole star known as Dhruva Loka. And when the when the dissolution of this universe takes place, the pole star remains. It doesn't dissolve, because, as I said, it is known as a Vaikuntha planet. And very often when the demigods, they have to consult with Lord Vishnu, such as whenever there is trouble brewing as a result of some of the demoniac activities that takes place, they have to go to the Supreme Lord. They don't go out of this universe. They stay in this universe and go to the pole star Vaikuntha planet, and there they, usually Lord Brahma, goes into meditation and tells the Lord, who is lying on an island, Shvetadvip, in the ocean of milk, and then he tells him the problem, and then the Lord gives him an answer in the heart, and then he communicates that to the demigods. So that's very well known, because sometimes we hear that some yogi who is not so advanced has gone to the Vaikuntha planets. Well, they can go to this Vaikuntha planets within this universe, but not to the one which is in the same universes as Goloka is, or which is known as that which is in the Paravyoma. Paravyoma is the infinite light. the infinite, or what is all called the impersonal Brahman. So don't go in there. So now, coming back, I've told this story for a very good and very important reason, to show you that Priyavrata was in a similar situation as Dhruva was after he had achieved his goal of God realization. And he wanted to continue to stay in that. So Priyavrata also said. So now Lord Brahma, in this particular area, knows how persuasive and how impactive and how influential Narada Muni is. I already told that story last night of how Narada Muni, just by talking to this this barbarian called Magari, he was able to convince him just in a very short time to give up this idea of killing animals and leaving them half half dead and half alive. And that he was going to hell and he would suffer like anything. So he was able to convince him just in that short conversation. What power, what potency, what intensity he had. So that he, Magari, he said, all that will happen to me? Yes, without a doubt. Is that what you want? And he said, no. And actually what happened is Magari followed his instructions. He built a little kutir, as I mentioned last night. And he began chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. And he chanted for a long period of time, became purified from the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, and eventually when Narada Muni and his friend Parvat Muni, they visited, and they were about 100 yards away, when the ex-barbarian Magari came and he saw him, when he went to meet his spiritual master, he didn't go running because he didn't want to step on the ants. So sensitive, so caring, so thoughtful had he become. This is what spiritual life is all about. Becoming thoughtful, becoming caring, becoming understanding, becoming sympathetic, becoming empathetic, being able to develop the conscience to such a degree that one will never want to disobey the orders of the Lord. One will want to follow the commandments of God and be totally and completely in tune with, in touch with God's order. In other words, the devotee takes the order of God and holds it on his head or in his heart and then enacts it. He performs it. He does it. And in doing so, pleases the Lord. And when the Lord is pleased, what happens? What happens is that the Lord, who is in the heart, expresses his love to the devotee. And when that love is expressed to the devotee, when I say the devotee, I mean the soul, which is just lying just beside the super soul, it feels that love. It's enwrapped, it's engulfed by that love. And it becomes enraptured. Depending upon the degree of love the Lord releases or expresses. It's very much like, for example, you have your son or your daughter and you haven't seen him or her for a long time and you give them a real heavy, deep, strong hug. You know, you're almost crushing them. Or if you've seen them in early part of the day and now you see coming home from work and you see him, your hug may not be as intense as when you haven't seen them for maybe a whole year. So it's so intense. Similarly, when the Lord is pleased and when the Lord is impressed and the Lord is satisfied by your service, he expresses his love to the soul. And that's love. It's like a balm of bliss. That's exactly what it is. It's a balm of bliss. And it literally explodes in the heart and the devotee feels such ecstasy, such joy, such happiness, such satisfaction. And he just weeps tears, or he may tremble. Or he may be just stunned, gaga, you know. Well, he can't do anything. We see so many evidences of this in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who exhibited so many of these different ecstatic symptoms. He would be stunned. He would perspire profusely. He would horripilate. The hairs on the arms and on the neck and the hair would just go up. He would tremble. The lips would tremble. He would be choked up. He couldn't speak. You see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he's trying to say, Lord Jagannath, and what comes out? You all read it, haven't you, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita? He's trying to say the word Jagannath, but he can't get it out because he's choked up. You lose your power to even speak because you're so overwhelmed, so overcome, overwrought. And besides that, the color changes. A person may become blanched, very very whitish in his coloring, and also he will weep tears. In the case of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he used to weep puddles of tears. Devotees would just grab it and just rub it all over their bodies, you know, because that was the real bath. You go and you take a bath from the water that, you know, comes out of the tap or comes out of the lake. That's a bath. But when you get a bath from the tears of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's eyes, there is nothing more cleansing, because it doesn't just clean the surface of the body. It cleans the mind. It cleans the heart. It cleans the speech. It cleans the entire soul of all of the dross, the lust, the anger, the greed, the envy, the illusion, the madness, the sloth, the gluttony, all of those good things that we love so much to express. So, I'm just being a little facetious, they're not really that good. So anyway, that's why a devotee loves to be in association, because those terrible things that I just mentioned, lust, anger, greed, and they disappear, and one becomes peaceful and loving and kind and sweet and warm and considerate and thoughtful. When he sees something needs to be done, he doesn't wait to the, you know, to the person who's in charge. For example, let's say you see a piece of paper lying outside, you know, in the hallway out there. It's lying on the right in the vestibule. Now, you can have, there are two kinds of mentalities. You can have the devotional mentality and say, well, this is Krishna's home, and Krishna can see everything here. I don't want him to see this dirty piece of paper lying here. So you pick it up and you throw it in the trash can. Or the other mentality is, not my duty. That's called the union mentality. Like, you know, if you're in the union, you get a special job. You want me to do that? You got to pay me extra. Because that's not my duty. That's not my job. You want me to work 1 minute more? Got to pay me more. This is, you know, and this, I don't blame the union people, because actually, they, if you go back in time, you know, you go back 80, 90 years ago, there were many people who were workers were exploited. So they had to have a union so that they were not taken undue advantage of. Consequently, these things, but what happened as a result, it ruined the whole family feeling, because employers became dominators instead of like fathers. Loving, that's the way you're supposed to be, like a loving father, and these are your sons and daughters who are you're employing. And when that happens, of course, you treat them with affection, with concern, with consideration. Not you just try to squeeze every bit of honey out of them until they drop dead, and then you just get another one to replace them. That's not the way an employer is supposed to be. And there are some companies that do have this paternal feeling, in which they don't even have a union. They don't need a union. I've read about these. They don't need it, because all the employees are completely satisfied and they're given more than what they even deserve. That way, like in Christmas vacations, the employer shares a huge amount of the profits with the employees, who feel that they're being considered, they're being taken seriously and being considered a part of the boss's family. And this is a wonderful feeling. You don't actually feel that you're just coming to a job, but you're coming to your second family. And you enjoy the work because you're being appreciated. That's the way it's supposed to be. And so coming back to the point is that devotional service is such that you don't have to wait for the person who's in charge, you know, who cleans the papers, or you don't have to go to him and say, there's some paper. You go up four floors to tell him that there's a piece of paper down lying in the vestibule. I mean, you could have just picked up the paper and thrown it in the trash can, but to walk up four cans as if you're not doing your job, you know, like that. You're not doing your service. That's stupid. It's foolish. It's nonsensical. Better you go and just pick it up. And when you pick it up, you say, thank you, Krishna, for giving me an opportunity to serve you a little more than I normally would. This is your blessing upon me. So again, we come back. Lord Brahma really gives Prince Priyavrata a true and deep talking to. And the main point that he makes, the essence of the points that he makes, is he says, we are all under the direction of the Supreme Lord. He says, I'm under the direction. I don't have independence to simply do what I want to do. When I was given the order to create this universe, the Lord told me what I had to do. He told me how to do it. He gave him all of the DNA codes, you know, so that he could create, you know, dogs and cats and ducks and geese and lions and tigers, because each one has a little different code which creates the different form. So I had to go and I had to do that. He says, yeah, it'd be nice. I meditated for a long time, but now Lord said, okay, it's time for you to do a little service now. You've been meditating, you got pure, you felt the bliss of God consciousness. Now go out and create. Of course, the gopis were not very satisfied by by Lord Brahma's creativity. They said, well, the trees and the flowers, that's okay, but you made a big boo-boo, a big mistake. You really bumbled when you made the human face and the human eyes. You gave us these eyelashes. These eyelashes are my doom. I want to continuously look at Krishna night and day without any interruption, but every time this little air comes, I have to go like this. And I don't see Krishna for a half a second. You can just imagine how much love they had for Krishna. We should be thinking like that. Oh, my dear gopis in Vrindavan, please bless me that I may have such love for Krishna as you do, that I miss that half or fraction of a second of not seeing him. That's why when we look at the altar, we look at the deity, we should look at him fixed, like focused, centered, that we don't even want to turn away. Of course, we have to cultivate that taste. And the way you cultivate it, if you don't have it, is in effect you cry out from the heart, my Lord, I have no taste for you. Just as Lord Chaitanya says, you know, one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw on the street, one should be more taught. Excuse me, that's not the verse I wanted to quote. Oh, my Lord, your holy name alone can render all benediction to living beings, and thus you have hundreds and millions of names like Krishna and Govinda. In these transcendental names, you have invested all your transcendental energies. There are not even hard and fast rules for chanting these names. Oh, my Lord, out of kindness, you enable us to easily approach you by your holy names, but I am so unfortunate that, what? I have no attraction. No attraction for these names. I'm so contaminated. I'm so filthy. I'm so attracted to matter. Please help me to have some attraction to your name. Will you please do this for me? I've been chanting. I chant 64 rounds. I still don't have any attraction. Something's missing. I don't love you enough. You alone can give me that. You can give me that love, and if you give that love to me, then when I chant the name, I will feel that the name and you are non-different. And feeling that the name and you are non-different, I will feel you. And feeling you, I will feel what? Sat, Chit, Ananda, Vigraha. Sat, eternality. Bliss, Ananda. Chit, knowledge. What knowledge? Knowledge that I am an eternal servitor of the Supreme Lord, that my only business is to serve you. Jivera svarupahoi krishnera nitya das. The constitutional position of the living entity is to be what? To be what? Yes, an eternal servant of Krishna. Thank you. I just want to make sure nobody's going to sleep on me now. But everybody looks wide awake, and I thank you so much for your attention. It's always nice to. Sometimes you get a few persons. In case you hear me raising my voice, it means I see somebody yawning. So when I see yawning, wake him up a little bit, shake him up a little, or her, so that they don't go to sleep on me. Because if they go to sleep and I go to sleep, it's maybe that'll be a blessing. I'm not sure. Yeah, Krishna's in charge, you see. So anyway, the important point is that Lord Brahma says, yes, you need to surrender to the will of God. I surrender. I've created this universe at the behest of God. Now, the Supreme Lord wants you, Priyavrata, to run this show, to run the kingdom. So, none of us have independence. Even though I know you love the chanting, you love the meditating, you love the scriptures, you love focusing and thinking about only things pertaining to and concerned about God. I know that, and that's good. But you will bring that spirituality that you have, which is amazing, which is unique, which no one else in your kingdom has. You will bring that into your rulership so that when you will rule in a way which no one else can. You will rule with love and not merely with envy, as so many kings do, not really with hostility, not merely wanting to be a lord. You don't have to be a lord. You already are a lord. You're a lord in the sense that you have connection with, conscious relationship with the Lord. And having a conscious relationship with the Lord is the highest state of consciousness that you can ever have. Therefore, you don't have to desire anything anymore except to use what you have received through your meditation, through your good past samskaras, your past good karma, and the blessings of the Lord. Just use them to run to you, to run the kingdom, to manage it, to make sure that it works the way it's supposed to, and to give everyone, and this is most important, to give everyone an example of how they should act. To manifest those wonderful, beautiful, sterling, sparkling qualities of patience, kindness, and sweetness, understanding heart, equal vision, balanced mind, faith, devotion, wisdom, all these wonderful qualities, courage, detachment, discrimination, faith in God, hope. Give everyone hope, even in difficulties, when there's darkness, when there's trouble, problems, wars. You can give hope because you are carrying the conscious affection, the conscious realization of the Supreme Lord. You've got it all. Now go out there and run this kingdom and be a perfect example so that everyone will know how they should live their life. Whatever a great man does, common men follow. Whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So, if you set the standard, if you by your good qualities, Brahma says, I will give you my blessings, and the Lord will give you his blessings. You are a winner. You can't be a loser. When you do God's will, even though sometimes it may appear, for example, the Battle of Kurukshetra, there were times when many, many casualties and many killings were taking place. And it seemed like, you know, the Pandavas were outnumbered. 11 million to 7 million. That's a big difference. It would seem from all appearances that they couldn't win. But they had what? They had what? They had Krishna, yes. And Krishna is more powerful than zillions and zillions and zillions of men. In fact, he is the one who gives them their power. And he can withdraw it. He can arrange it in such a way that the Pandavas would win. And he does do that. There are so many wonderful events that take place in the Mahabharata, in the Battle of Kurukshetra. I mean, look at Bhishma Dev. Nobody can defeat Bhishma Dev. He even was ready to defeat his own guru, Parashuram. That was absolutely amazing. They were fighting for 28 days because Parashuram had ordered Bhishma Dev, I want you to, I'm just remembering her name. Ambika, Ambalika, and what's the third one? Ambika, Ambalika, and Amba. Yes. So it was Amba. She, there was a whole story. I won't go into it. But anyway, she was rejected by the man she wanted to marry. And so Bhishma was responsible for that, because when there was this Svayamvara and the girls were standing there, he came roaring in with his chariot and just picked them each up, put all of them on the chariot and roared away. And then all the warriors who wanted to marry these girls, they went after him, and single-handedly he'd shoot one arrow and 100 arrows would multiply from one arrow. He had so many wonderful mystic powers with respect to archery. Nobody could defeat him. And then what happened was that Amba went to Parashuram. He says, "Well, I'm not going to have a husband, because the man who was supposed to marry me, he rejected me because Bhishma put his big hands on me. And as a result of that, he considers me unchaste. And not only that, but he won me. And that warrior considered that for him to take me now would be like taking the leavings of some animal. So that would be like an insult." So he said, Bhishma is the only one. He touched me. He should marry me then. Anyway, Bhishma refused because he had taken a vow. He wouldn't get married. He took that vow to whom? He took that vow to Satyavati's father, who was the fisherman. And he would give Satyavati to the father of Bhishma Dev, Shantanu. He would give her only on the basis that Satyavati's son could become the next king. So Bhishma, even he was 16 years old, he took the vow, "No, I'll never get married. For a kshatriya, that's something." And he said, "Not only that, but I'll never have children. I take a vow of celibacy for the rest of my life." So getting back to this fight between Bhishma Dev and Parashuram, the most powerful war, two of the most powerful in the world, and Parashuram is the guru of Bhishma Dev. So they're fighting 28 days. They were fighting back and forth. The arrows were coming, and Parashuram was actually, he had no anger. He was actually quite pleased with his student. It wasn't the same like today, where people feel envious and angry and hostile. Parashuram was a Shakyavesha avatar of warrior mentality, warrior ability. So he was quite pleased to see his disciple able to fight against him, and he was unable to fight against his disciple to come out a victor. So who is going to win this? And is Amba going to stay? Is she going to stay single for the rest of her life? So what was going to happen? Well, one night, Bhishma Dev, it was after the 28th day, on the night of the 28th day, he got a dream, and a few demigods appeared before him. And they said, "We have a mantra. We want to give this to you, and you can defeat Parashuram with it. He doesn't have this, and he doesn't know how to oppose it. He doesn't know how to baffle it. So here's the mantra. Now I can maintain the vow that I made to my father." Because if he hadn't maintained his vow, it would be like a lie. If you say, "Okay, I will never marry, I will never have sexual intercourse," and then just because the guru says, "Okay, I want you to go and marry this woman and give her a child," well, wait a minute. I have done this for my father so that my father could have Satyavati as his wife. Now, what does that mean? It means I lied. And so he would be known as a liar. And anyone who's self-respecting doesn't, or self-righteous, doesn't want to ever be thought of as a liar. That's the worst thing that a noble person, a self-righteous, a righteous person wants. So anyway, the next day for the battle, they're on the battlefield, and Bhishma Devi's got a slight smile on his face, and Parashuram is looking at him. He's wondering what the smile is about, because he must have something that Parashuram doesn't know about. And they're on the field, and they're starting the battle. The battle is getting started, and Bhishma Dev is ready to end it and utter the mantra. And who appears before him but his mother, Ganga Devi? "No," she says. "No? No, you will not use that mantra against your Gurudev." She says, "That is an offense." He says, "Well, what am I going to do? He started this fight in the first place. I'm just trying to end it." She says, no. So, well, then tell him to stop. If he stops, I'll stop. So she goes over to Parashuram and she says, my son, he's got a weapon that he could defeat you, so why don't you just stop fighting and then he'll stop fighting. Oh, no, I'm not gonna stop just because you're asking me to stop. Oh, so she goes back to her son. She says, he doesn't want to stop just because I asked him. So you stop. You take the initiative. No, I can't stop. So she's going back and forth, and then she says to Parashuram, well, if he says he'll stop, will you stop? He says, yes. Okay. Then she says, okay, will you both stop fighting? And they both say, yes. And that ends the fight. So poor Amba. Well, what did she do? So she went and she went to some a colony where there was ascetics there, and then she said, I'm not going to go on living. She said, I can't have a husband. This guy Bhishma, he caused the whole thing. I'm going to get even on him. I'm going to take my revenge against this unscrupulous warrior. I'm going to kill him one day. So what she did is she starved her body down. She was just skin. It was like a walking skeleton. And then she lit a fire. Definitely not beauty pageant material. No way. So she was just, you know, skin and bones, kind of like your hollows here, hollows in her eyes, you know. I mean, just clavicle bones just sticking out. It's like you could play an instrument on her ribs, you know. They were so protuberant. So anyway, seriously. So anyway, she lights up this fire, and what happens is then she says, in my next life, I want to kill, I'm doing all this asceticism so that I can kill Bhishma Dev in my next life. So she jumped into the fire, and that was the end of Amba for this life. Anyway, she came back in the next life, and she didn't kill Bhishma, but she was instrumental in enabling Arjuna to do it. Actually, what was the name? Thank you, Shikundi. Yes, Shikundi was actually Shikundi was born as a female to begin with, and that's a whole story in itself. By the way, I will have some of my books out this evening if you want. I have that story. It's fascinating. It's better than any Karmi movie that you ever saw. It's the story of seriously. The story of how Shikundi becomes a male. Anyway, long story short is that becomes Shikundi, but she's a female, and the King Drupada and his wife, they were promised a male by Lord Shiva. So here a female is born. So what's going to happen? He said, "Don't worry, you will have a male in due course of time." Anyway, what happened was that a marriage was arranged between Shikundi. Nobody knew that Shikundi was a female. Her sex was kept. She was dressed always in male clothing, which would fit in very perfectly with today's age, you know. So she was dressed like a male, and everyone thought it was a male. Probably altered her voice a little, talked in a lower tone, kind of like this, you know, like some of those voices that I do on my tapes and CDs, you know. Sometimes I have to do the girl voices, you know. So she probably had the ability to lower her voice a little to a kind of a breathy, lowy tone. Anyway, what happened was that the result was that a marriage was made for Shikundi and the brother of King Drupada, brother or brother-in-law. And what happened as a result is that there was a marriage, and then one day the young woman walked in on Shikundi while the shirt was off, and she was fully mature, and she says, "What? I've married a woman? This is unconscionable. This is undesirable. This is horrible. I'm going back to my father and tell him this should never have happened." So she goes back to her father and she tells her father that, "I married a woman." "What? He says, are you sure? He says, absolutely. And she described the body that she saw. He says, oh, well, this means war. This was done with deliberate intention, with the same purpose. Well, I'm going to fight with with Jupiter for this. It will be a major war. So anyway, in the interim, Shikundi hears about what's going to happen, that there's going to be a big battle. So she decides to go into the woods in the forest because she doesn't want her father to get killed, doesn't want the warriors to get killed, doesn't want anybody to get killed. So as she's walking into the forest, she sees there's a little thatched cottage there of a yaksha. Yakshas have mystical powers. So she tells the yaksha her problem, that, you know, that here I am, I'm a female, and there's going to be a big war. Unless I'm a male, a lot of people are going to get killed, including my father. So you have these mystical powers. Do you think you can lend me your malehood and take my femalehood? No problem. Piece of cake. And then all he says is a few mantras, and Shikundi becomes a male, and the yaksha becomes a female. And it's for a certain limited amount of time, of course. It was... So what happens is that, this is really hilarious, what happens is now Shikundi comes back and he's a male, okay? So meanwhile, he goes to the father and she's a he. So she tells him about the sex change that has taken place and he says, look, I'm a male now. So go back to your brother and tell him that it's all false, it's untrue what the daughter said. So he sends a messenger and says, no, it's all true, untrue, she's lying, and you can come and check for yourself. So he says, okay, I will. So he goes, I'm going to have two women messengers, if I recall, and he sends them to the kingdom of Drupada, and then Shikundi takes open the shirt, and it's just a male. And the two women say, yeah, he's a male. So then father says to her, why are you telling this lie that she was a female when actually he's a male? She says, I don't know. My head is spinning now. I must have been deluded or something was wrong with me. But if he's a male, then that's fine with me. I'll go back to my household life. So anyway, the point I'm trying to bring out here is that these... stories in the Mahabharata that Bhishma Dev could not violate his vow, and as a result of maintaining his vow, we should all maintain our vows. Many of us are initiated, and we don't know eating of meat or fish or eggs or or intoxication, or gambling. Eating of meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no gambling, and no illicit sex. Yeah, so we take these vows, don't take them lightly. We should put our life on these things. It's very important. And to the degree that we should always pray to the Lord very intensely. We should not think that, yeah, I took the vow, therefore it's going to happen automatically. I've got the blessings of my guru. Pray with all your heart and soul and might and mind that you can maintain these vows, because that makes us dear to Krishna. It makes us even more lovable to Krishna, because he sees that we're trying and we're coming to Krishna. We're coming to the spiritual master. We're begging them, please give me the strength. Give me the bala. Bala is intestinal fortitude, the strength, internal strength, to do what? To resist temptations and to control the mind. So we pray to the Lord, please, my Lord, on my own, I can't do it. I'm weak. I'm fallen. I have failings. I have uncertainties, insecurities. I have past experiences, which when I think of them, they pull me down. And I need you to prop me up. I need you to help me overcome these temptations. Without your mercy, without your guidance, without your direction, I will fail miserably. I know... that on my own or by my own endeavor, I would never succeed. We need to talk to the Lord. We need to pray to the Lord. We need to beg the Lord for his mercy, for his help, for his kindness with our whole heart and soul. And if you pray like that, you'll feel it in the depth of your heart, a response. Just as Lord Brahma gets a response. And when you get that response, you'll feel strong, you'll feel able, you'll feel that you have the mercy of Krishna. And when you have that mercy, yes, you will maintain your vows. If you don't have that mercy, forget it. There will be so many temptations. You walk on the street, you see billboards, males and women's and embraces and so forth. Things remind you of things of that you may have done or you may have seen before you became a devotee. So those things can get your mind thinking. They can get your mind imagining. But with the bala, with the intestinal fortitude and strength, with that, you will be strong to resist this. You will be able to come up with the thought, no, that is useless, it is worthless, it is harmful, it will hurt me, it will take me away from Krishna. No, I won't do it, and I'm not going to do it. You can have that kind of strength only by Krishna's mercy. And I pray and I wish and I beg the Lord that He gives you all and He gives me that same strength so that we can eventually all go back home, back to Godhead, to the spiritual world and meet either Dhruva Maharaj in this spiritual world or we meet Lord Krishna Himself in the other spiritual world, which we know as the Vaikuntha, or we may go to Goloka and have either a friendship, a relationship, a paternal relationship, or boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, whatever it is, our heart should be flooded and filled with love for Krishna, and we should try our best and beg continuously, please, Lord, help me to remember you. Help me to always think of you. Krishna says, engage your mind always in thinking of me. Become my devotee. Offer obeisances. Worship me. Thus completely absorbed in me, surely you will what? Come to me. And he says to Arjuna, therefore, Arjuna, you should always think of me in the form of Krishna and at the same time perform your prescribed duty of fighting with your activities dedicated to me and your mind and intelligence fixed on me. You will come to me without a doubt. That's a promise. That's a promise. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give them the understanding by which they may come to me. To show them special mercy, I, dwelling in their hearts, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So we need to go and we need to pray as much as we can. Don't take your good fortune for granted. You may lose it if you do. If you take it in such a way as to believe and truly believe you're not worthy of it, but you're actually living on mercy, you're living on grace, that we've all performed so many rotten activities in our past. But Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, the great acharyas, out of their causeless mercy, is enabling us to go back home, back to Godhead. If we remember that it is by their mercy that we are sitting here today. It is by their mercy that we are reading these books. It is by their mercy that we are having each other's association. It is by their mercy that we will go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So, are there any questions or comments? Yes? He's sitting ahead of you, so I'll take him. Yes, go ahead, Prabhuji. You have to talk good and loud, and if you got the mic, yeah, let the people on the internet hear this. So you're what inspired me to do all those narrations that I did? Okay.
For example,
Vaishnav saints.
Vaishnav saints like Narada Das Thakur, he narrated how Lord Chaitanya, he
Okay, let me get to your answer. Otherwise, we'll take another hour if you continue on your question. Let me answer your question. Your question essentially is what inspired me to do all of those different narrations of Srila Prabhupada's books? What caused me to do this? Because, well, first of all, I saw that many Karmi publishing companies, they had... they didn't call them audio books, they called them books on tape in those days. And they were doing it. All of the big publishing companies, like, you know, Random House was doing it, Harper's was doing it, you name it, Macmillan was doing it. All of the big publishing companies, they had books. And then for persons who didn't have enough time to read the books, they would put them out in a tape form, and you would sit in your car and put the tape in, and you could hear the novel, usually novels, or it could be a philosophy book or a self-improvement book. And I saw, excuse me, let me take a little water. And I saw that all these companies had them, then why didn't the BBT have it? And I questioned, and I went to Mahindra, I remember, at that time, it was 1984, I believe. That goes far back. And I said, well, why don't you let me do, I'll do the Bhagavad Gita, and maybe we can issue it with the, you can advertise it in the back of the Bhagavad Gita book, and then the BBT can sell it, the tape also. So he said, okay, well, we'll think about it. Well, he thought, and then 6 months went by and nothing happened. And then I said, well, what about it? He says, well, we're still thinking about it. I says, well, if I just bank on them thinking about it, it's never going to get done. So I decided that with, I remember the Pujari Navadvipi had come to me. He says, well, you know, why don't you just do the Bhagavad Gita and we'll do it up in the, they had a little studio. So I did the first one, which was the Bhagavad Gita. And it turned out nicely. Many devotees, they liked to hear it. And then we started sending them out. The BBT didn't want to handle it. They didn't want to get involved in the investment. They were not able to see what many big publishers were able to see, unfortunately. Anyway, what happened was that in 1984, a radio station, KHQN, I believe, was formed by Charu and by Bhavi in Salt Lake City. They have a radio station there, and they asked me if I would like to do radio programs there with them, and that they would be broadcast on radio, on the tape, in Salt Lake City. So I said, well, sure. When I went to college, my major was radio broadcasting, and so I did acting, I did writing, I did directing, producing. I did all of those kind of things in college. So I thought, well, this would be the ideal engagement for me because it's what I know. So that went on for about a year. And then what happened was that Mukunlal, was it Mukunlal? No. No, somebody gave me a copy of the Chaitanya, it wasn't the Chaitanya Bhagavat, but it was Shishikumar Ghosh's I think it was Lord Govinda, something, Lord Chaitanya something. Anyway, I read this and it was most beautiful, startling, amazing piece of work. And I thought, well, this is the story of Jagai and Madai. And I've never heard it told in such detail. And he took it from the Chaitanya Bhagavat. So what happened is that I scripted it, taking out certain passages which were unnecessarily lengthy. Suffice it to say, long story short, I narrated that. Well, after I narrated that, and it started getting distributed around the world, so many devotees wanted more. And then the next one was the Trial and Triumphs of Haridas Thakur. And then the next one was Lord Chaitanya Dances. Anyway, it went on and on and on. And then it came the Ramayana. We did that. Then did the Krishna book. And before you knew it, it was just escalating and escalating. More and more were coming out. And devotees were asking more and more. I was advertising them in ISKCON World Review at that time. So long story short is that They came out, devotees wanted them, it served a need because so many devotees would be driving in their cars to work or would be driving their bicycles or cooking their food, and their ears were open and they could read the books through the ears. And I thought, well, this is wonderful because devotees would have the opportunity to not waste the time. Of course, they would hear Hare Krishna mantra often, but here they would get a chance to actually hear the books, which they weren't getting enough time to read. So what happened was that it served a purpose. The first full book that I did was the Krishna book. The second one was the Ramayana. And then the third was, I believe, the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And after the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the next book was another one. But anyway, I will have them all out on a table this evening. And those of you who want to obtain them can do so, as well as my own actually written book. So they are available, and so please avail yourself. They'll probably be in the back here someplace, so that when devotees finish, come from the last artik, when they're ready to go to the after I speak, and they're ready to go to the feast, there will be some devotees standing back there. And they'll be able to. You'll be able to look at them and see which ones I have. So it comes from just. I gave you a long-winded answer, and I'm sorry about that. But that's just the way it happened. But the real answer is that Krishna wanted it done. You see, he wanted it done, and nobody was doing it from the BBT, and I was ready to volunteer, and I had to pay for this. I produced it. I had an engineer. I paid him for every tape. I had to pay him $100 for every tape. And it went into thousands and thousands of dollars. I even had to take a job outside in the movie industry. There's a movie extra in the Karmi movies to raise the funds in order to be able to do it. I mean, you know, if there's a will, there's a way. I don't go around asking people, can you give me the, can you give? Now, I feel, why do that? Devotees, many of them are poor enough. Let me go out. In the movie industry, they got plenty of money there. And I'd get to work 12, 14-hour days sometimes and come out with $300, $400, $500 paycheck sometimes. So put it all to paying the engineer for these. And one thing about it, now this shows you how Krishna's grace. This person who was the engineer, he was not really a devotee, but he was what we call a fringy or an outsider who was really good. He was a rock and roll. He was good with his guitar. But one thing he knew how to pronounce Sanskrit words. And when I was narrating, he would be reading the book along with me. Just as I'm reading now, he'd have the book and he'd read. And any time there would be the slightest mistake in my Sanskrit pronunciation, he would say, stop. And then we'd go back and we'd do it again. You know, we'd go back to the beginning of that sentence and we'd do it again. And this was the mercy that this is a person who's not even what we call a full devotee. I mean, I hardly can pronounce some of these Sanskrit words. And he was able to correct me whenever I'd have it wrong. You know, I pronounce a long E for a short E or a long I for a short I, like that. So that was all Krishna's grace. It was so much mercy, such kindness. And I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to do it. And at the beginning, it was a little bit slow, but devotees wanted more and more. They're in Russia now. They're in China now. They're all over the world. And I'm so grateful to have been given this opportunity to do this. Not that it's any better service than anyone else's. It's not. But it just gives people another way, another opportunity to hear Srila Prabhupada's books. And that's the most important thing. And I didn't change anything from Srila Prabhupada's books. I read it exactly as they were, as it is. You see, later on, the BBT made certain grammatical changes. I didn't do that because those changes had not been made yet. So you'll get it exactly the way it was, Krishna book, the way it was in 1984. Those little red cover, green cover, pocketbooks that we had in those days. Okay, does that answer your question? There was another question there, Prabhuji. Yes. A microphone, please.
Thank you so much. I was wondering, you were explaining the power of praying with great sincerity, opening our heart and mind and soul, and by offering prayers, being able to draw Krishna's mercy. Mm. Could you talk about the importance of simplicity, cultivating simplicity in the power of our prayer? Sometimes if our nature simple, we may not be able to pray very sincerely.
Well, then that's the first thing you have to pray for. You have to pray for sincerity and simplicity. That's the first thing. That shouldn't be so difficult. If you know that you're not simple, and if you know that you use complicated words, or you use four-syllable words, or you use roundabout sentences, or sentences would normally take five lines, or anything that's complicated, you need to say, "My dear Lord, I'm so puffed up, I'm so full of arrogance, I'm so full of false erudition, false scholarship. I think I'm so important." People say, "Oh, I know so many verses, and they all compliment me. They all think I'm a scholar." They all, like Rupa Goswami, the way he prayed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Everybody thinks I'm a scholar. I'm so knowledgeable, and yet I don't even know what the purpose of life is. He said to Lord Chaitanya, "Can you please help me to become truly a devotee? Help me to be simple, Lord. I mean, after all, how can I be pretentious to you? You know it all. I maybe have to put on the dog for this person because I want to make an impression, or I have to put it on for this person because I want to impress him and make him think that I'm smart or I'm great." I know one particular Swami. I mean, he comes out with these Bhagavad Gita verses in Sanskrit one after another, but he lacks humility, though. What is the value? So people think he's very smart and very very high and very erudite. But really, he's lacking in the most fundamental, the most important quality, which is humility and modesty and being laid back and actually thinking that he's not as great. We need to be thinking and feeling and willing like the Goswamis did. I'm nothing. I'm insignificant. I'm worthless. I have nothing except the mercy that God has given me. If we had more time, I'm going to tell it tonight, the story of the mercy of God. It's a very fascinating story of how of a king who loses his thumb and so forth. But anyway, the important thing is that we need to just be straightforward. Krishna doesn't care that you have to address him in the most formal language. Just address him in the language that you normally speak. You're speaking to your friend. You don't put on a show for your friend. You know, you say, "Hey, how's it going? What's happening? You know, what's going on? What's going down?" You know, you talk in a kind of friendly, easygoing way. Well, that's the way you talk to Krishna, but with my heart. "My Lord, I really have got a problem, and this is my problem. You know, I really want to, I want to pray to you simply. I want to pray to you sincerely, and I don't know if I have a sincere bone in my body. You know, but you can make me sincere though, because you're all sincerity. You're the epitome of sincerity, the quintessence of sincerity. Would you make me sincere? No pretension." That's what sincerity is. No pretension, you know. No putting on airs. No hypocrisy. No, "I show this, but I do something else on the side." You just talk to the Krishna. He knows what you do. You can't put it on. You can't put a show for him. He laughs. "Ha, he's trying to impress me." Or he's trying to impress them, and he doesn't think I know what's going on. "I'm not going to give this person mercy. He doesn't deserve it. He's trying to be me. He's taking my position." Instead of pointing to me and saying, "Go to Krishna," he's saying, "Yeah, come to me, because I'm a lord of Sanskrit, or I'm the lord of the scriptures, or I'm the lord of this. Look up to me, honor me, exalt me, give me a cushion to sit down on. Make sure you've got a garland to put on my neck, because after all, I'm special, I'm unusual, I'm unique." This is the madness that we all fall into. It's not just, you know, you. It's all of us. And we need to overcome that. And once we acknowledge it, once we live, once we recognize it, and we own up to it in front of Krishna, then he says, "Ah, you've come back to me. You're my daughter. You're my son. That's the way you originally were. Now I'll give you plenty of blessings because you're not putting on a show for me or anybody else. You just want to come back to me. You just want to express from yourself what is coming from me. You want to be one with me in love, in will, and in devotion." So that's what it's all about. So, and keep talking. And you actually have to feel in your heart the separation. It's this pretension that keeps us separated from Krishna. The pretension of trying to be him. "I'm not going to give him my mercy because he'll just put on more shows. He'll start crying. I let him, you know, I give him some mercy and he cries. So now he's, it was real tears, which he got from me. But now he goes around and turns on the tears and turns them off, like they do in Vrindavan. Some of these sahajis, they put on their tear shows, you know, and they're crying and crying, oh, and putting on lipstick like a gopi, eyeshadow, wear long wigs like a girl, you know. You don't have to do that. Look at Ramananda Roy. He was a governor. He was like a karmi, and yet he had such incredible degree of love and devotion for Krishna. In fact, he was so advanced that Lord Chaitanya used to sit like a child in front of him, just listening to him expound on the glories of Radha's and Krishna's and the gopis' pastimes. He was a person who they would carry him on a palanquin. He was like a governor. But he had two lives. He led a double life. The external life, he acted like any ordinary person. But his inner life was completely private. Nobody knew about it except those persons whom he felt should know about it. Like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he told him. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a great sage. And at heart, he was really a devotee, although it hadn't come out until Lord Chaitanya came upon the scene in his life. So Ramananda Roy was, that's the way you have to be. Jesus Christ said, you know, go into your closet and you can let your heart out. Don't make a big show of prayers. In ancient times, in time of Jesus, you used to have the rabbis on the street, and they used to have the prayer books right out on the street, you know, in front of the temples. They would be doing this, what they call davening, going back and forth like this, back and forth, praying out on the street, and people would say, oh, look how reverential he is. Look how humble he is. Oh, look how religious he is. And Jesus said, that's all they're going to get. They're not going to get what they appear to be asking for to go back to the eternal world. They're not going to get that, because you go to the eternal world when you become completely, totally, 100% humble. All they want to do is impress people and make them think that they're great devotees. So they're doing all this, reddling the scriptures, the Sadducees, and all of these different pundits there. So it's not what you do outside, but what you do inside. Nice sound. So, does that answer your question? Any other questions or comments? I know I've held you a long time. I give you my apologies, but these questions were so wonderful and so compelling that I thank you for your questions. Is there anything else I don't want? We've got another question. Please. Maybe a criticism? Hopefully.
It's a very short question.
Okay. Yes, I remember saying that.
I was wondering
which B-A-L-M or B-O-M-B? Yeah. Well, it could be taken almost both ways, but the bomb that I meant is B-O-M-B, like an explosion in the heart, which when we have an explosion, you know, when it hits the earth, everything kind of goes up. You've seen pictures of it, all the smoke and the dirt and everything goes up. So what happens is all the dirt which has been surrounding the soul literally is thrown here, there, and everywhere, and you feel the bliss of God consciousness. But balm is also useful because a balm is soothing, it's quieting, but that comes later. That's another aspect of Krishna consciousness, the peaceful aspect, and there's the blissful aspect. And then, of course, there's the knowledgeable aspect in which you know, without a doubt, without the slightest doubt, that you are an eternal servant of Krishna. And their only business, your constitutional business, is to serve and love Krishna now and forever. That's your only business. Okay? Got that? That's a nice question, by the way. Anybody on the distaff side, the Mataji side? You're welcome to ask questions, by the way. Just because I'm wearing saffron robes doesn't mean I'm suddenly going to become all flustered by your question. You're welcome. Besides, I'm old enough to be your great grandfather, so that should be good enough reason for you to ask questions. Okay, this is going out of internet land, so there are a few people in New Dwarka. They keep these on archive, so I don't know if they going to do that. One particular Mataji, she does. Are there no questions here, or no comments, or nothing to add to it? Maybe I'll ask a question then. So what was the cause? Why was Saruchi? What was her main problem that she talked to Dhruva Maharaj in that manner that she did? What in her nature caused her to act like that? So which Mataji would like to answer that question? Because you know better than any of the guys here, because you're in the female body. So what in her nature caused her to act that way? If you don't want to answer, it's okay. But I'm asking the questions to get you talking a little bit. Don't be... Yes, go ahead. A little loud. Well, you're just giving... Take the mic. Okay, what about envy? What was she envious of? Actually, her position was that there's another quality. Think about it. It's close to envy that she had. And remember, we've been talking about lording it over. Women want to be lords also. They lorded over men. Men lorded over women. It's the same thing. So she wanted to... It was her arrogance. It was her feeling of wanting to be the chief, the best, the topmost queen. And she was asserting her lordship over that little boy. You got to be a lord over him. It's enough you're a lord over your husband. You have to be a lord over his little child from the other wife. It shows you. And you know what happened to her? Can you tell us what happened to her eventually? What was that? She died. Well, everybody dies. So, did you remember? Yeah. Are you talking to the mic? I'm not hearing. Somebody help her to adjust that mic if it's not on. Yeah, I thought I heard something click. Yeah, something. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead. Good and loud. Thank you. No, he was already devotee, but he was not what we call a practicing devotee. He became a practicing king, but a devotee in his heart. Go ahead. I'm not sure I understand her question. Is anybody could give... So are we talking about Saruchi now? Yeah, that's correct. That's true. She committed an offense because he was, as you've just mentioned, he had not become a devotee, but he was a devotee at heart, because no one does what Dhruva Maharaj does. Most children will just cry and that'll be the end of it. You know, no more thing. Not, I'm going to the forest. I'm going to find God. So yes, and she died in a fire. That's how she died. In the fire, when she was going north, she died in a fire, and that was the result of her offense that she had committed against little Dhruva. Krishna does not like anyone to offend his devotees. He prefers you offend him before you offend the devotee. So please, never offend a devotee in thought. In word and deed. Sometimes you may have difficulty in the thought, but if you do, please, again, go to the Lord and say, "My Lord, I'm so sorry I made such an offense in my thought, even in my mind." Even though in Kali Yuga you don't pay the price of it in thought, nonetheless, to get rid of it, as soon as you see it, you snip it right at the root. Please help me, Lord, to not offend devotees. I don't want to do that. Let me always serve them and love them and adore them and assist them. Yeah. So thank you for your answer. I'm very glad we got there. Anybody else on this side would like to add something? No? Nothing else? Then I think I'm about to conclude. Tonight I will be talking about, I don't know the exact verse I will be doing, but please, I hope you'll all give me the opportunity of again sharing this teachings with all of you and taking the blessings of your association, which really inspires me no end to want to talk about these. Normally, I tell you the truth, even when I'm in Los Angeles, I don't talk this much. Classes, they cut me down. In 20 minutes, it's over. And they're firm. Whereas here, I come as a guest, nobody says anything, so I just go on. So I'll be back in two weeks. This is where I have to speak. But that, it's not only true here. I was in Denver 3 weeks ago. It's the same thing. My home program went for two. I spoke for 2.5 hours that night. Another, I was in Tucson last week, and we did a program in the audiovisual room. That went for 2 hours. It's just the nature when devotees get absorbed and involved somehow in the talk, and I get inspired by the glances and by the attention and by the absorption. It's churning the nectar, and that's what I'm about. That's what we're all about. And I just want to see more and more of it. Okay? So I think we'll call it. Please let me see you tonight. All glories to Srila Prabhupada ki. All glories to Kishore Kishori ki. Jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Hare Krishna. Thank you so much. Thank you very, very much. So I will leave. Yes, Prabhu. Thank you for a correction. I said that tonight's program, I meant tomorrow evening's program, that will be in the temple. Tonight I'll be at Naperville to give a Bhagavad Gita class. But that class that I've been referring to in the evening will be tomorrow evening for the Sunday feast. But tonight will be in Naperville. Tomorrow morning I will also be in Naperville. Tomorrow evening I will be here, and then Monday morning I will continue this next verse in the Bhagavatam. Okay? Sorry about that confusion. Thanks for your correction. Appreciate that.